John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And Dave Wyman joins us on Wednesdays. And, still remains an interesting time for the Seahawks with the Carlos Hyde signing. And, still think that the addition of Josh Gordon would not be a bad one if he gets cleared from suspension, which I anticipate he would. And then other than that, just getting that run-stopping defensive tackle. So as you look back, Dave, how do you kind of see the way this offseason has gone for John Snyder and the Seahawks?
Well, it's just so much up in the air, John. I think that, everything's kind of a wait and see. I mean, the last two drafts are kind of a wait and see, really the last three. And, you're going to need a lot of defensive linemen, a lot of pass rush to just step up and be, like those guys that came in 11, 12, 13, KJ Wright, Richard Sherman, I mean, Bobby Wagner. Those are the kinds of guys that you're hoping to get out of these last three drafts. And you know what? They do it all the time. So, I mean, I'm pretty comfortable going in knowing that those guys are going to get better. I think a lot of people don't feel that way. But, the Carlos Hyde thing, John, we talked a little bit about this yesterday. I think after we talked to you, otherwise I'd have brought it up, but it's pretty important. I mean, and I don't know how much of it is an overreaction, not by the Seahawks, but maybe by fans that, yeah, you got to get Carlos Hyde in there because Chris Carson is very special. He's a very special player, but if he's not ready, running back is as important as any position on this team. You could argue maybe even more important than D-line and pass rush. The running game on offense is huge, and we saw what happened when it collapsed at the end of the year. I mean, and again, I keep saying this, if they'd had Chris Carson in that the divisional playoff game against Green Bay, I think they would have won. But, they couldn't get – I mean, Russ was the leading rusher in both of those playoff games. So, yeah, it's really important in getting a guy like Carlos Hyde. Might be a bigger move than we think later on down the road if they have that same fortune with the running backs.
Well, you've watched the change in this league, particularly now at the running back position, which, of course, has been many ways devalued, but not the value of running the football is so important in this league. But the devaluation is one that you still look at it and say, okay, usually 8 to 10 teams that are the best running teams are the ones that make the playoffs. I mean, for example, exactly. You look, there was 8 teams last year in the top 10 or top 12 that did that.
John, and I did a football 101 thing on that, looking at stats going into the playoffs, and it's exactly what you just said. 8 of 10 running teams, the two to me that stand out every year, and everybody says, well, what about wins? Well, that's not really a stat. That's more of a result. But yeah, as far as the statistics go, running teams make the playoffs. Teams with a great turnover ratio make the playoffs. And that's the Seahawks had that last year, even though they weren't very good on defense. They were third in the NFL. So there's just a couple of stats that are indicative every year going into the playoffs. And, that's running is one of them. And so as much as everybody wants, they worry about the receivers and who are they going to get in here. You mentioned Josh Gordon, Antonio Brown's name has been thrown around. To me, the Carlos Hyde signing might be way more valuable than any receiver that you could get Russ, just because that's such it's so much of what they want to do. And the reason why I love Chris Carson so much, he really surprised me a couple times last year, John. He beat corners to the edge who had, they were head up on him, and he was able to run around him. He runs through people. He's got some shake now, and so he's just very important to what they do. And, and we saw what happened in the playoffs, and they really, piecing together that Philly win. And then, and I know Philadelphia was banged up and everything, but without their running game, I think it really hampered them. They ended up winning, 17-9? I think they had the same score both times that we went out there. But, in the Green Bay game, it certainly showed up as a huge problem for them. So, yeah, running back is, having Carlos Hyde, who had over 1,000 yards last year, that might end up being, one of – I hope not. I mean, I hope that they're able to get Carson back and he stays healthy, but it might end up being more important than getting a pass rusher in here.
Oh, yeah. But that's the thing when you look at it, because, I mean, there was such a strange season last year because, again, somewhat of the slow starts in the you know, not being able to have the lead in what about all but five games at halftime. I mean, because I mean, you look at the way that the record went is that they were 3-3 at home. And 3-4 if you include halftime ties. 3-3 at home in games where they were trailing at the half, and then they were 3-1 trailing at the half of games on the road. So really, when you think about it, they only had five games the whole season, one at home, where they were able to have the lead at the half. And that makes it a little bit tougher, because what it does, it puts Russell Wilson in a scramble mode to try to come back, and they were able to do it to get to 11 wins. So I have to think the key this year is trying to be more successful and get more points in the first half, but also give up less points, because that, I think, was the real crux of everything. Because, you know, they'd be stalled for a little bit on the drive in the first quarter or in the first half, and next thing you know, here comes the opponent coming with a touchdown drive.
Yeah. Well, and pretty much the same stat you have, John. I just pulled out a sheet that I did. And, you know, of the 18 games that they played, they were down at half and won six times. They were up at half and won seven times. And then they were down at half and lost five times. So, yeah, I mean, it's always get off to a good start. I just always go back to, John, sitting in meetings and putting in a defense. And if everybody does their job, you should stop the play. Okay. Yeah. They shouldn't get a yard on you, right? Well, that's wishful thinking. It's the same thing with offense. I mean, they're running plays. They want to be up at halftime. They know the stat. What are they? 56-57-0 went up at half by four points or more. So, you know, they're trying. They're trying to do that. It just hasn't worked out that way. But the thing that you have, and I don't know how they do that. Do they run hurry up offense? Do they select different plays? The thing I really liked about last year, Schottenheimer took the team from being the number 18 offense his first year as a coordinator, as far as yards go, to number 8. So they're a top 10 offense. I like to think that they're going to get better. Schottenheimer and Russell working together. Shoot, you go back to 2018, those first two games, remember, Russell threw it 33 and 36 times. That's not really the formula for him. And Schottenheimer was, you know, found a shiny new toy. And so I think him and Russ are kind of settling in together and getting an idea of, you know, how to call plays, what plays work best, and get, you know, in more of a rhythm. So they should get better. I'm going to count on that to happen, because I think Schottenheimer's really good. And I think Russell's really good. So, but again, you know, there's always all this talk about, okay, maybe we should hurry up more. Maybe they should throw it more. That hasn't really been the formula, you know, and sometimes you run hurry up offense and it's hurry up and three and out, and then your defense is out on the field. Those are all good ideas and everything, and I know that they're going to be working hard to start fast, but that just hasn't really been what's happened around here. And the good news is that you have a guy that's the best in the NFL as far as fourth quarter and overtime comebacks. You don't want it to come to that, but look, you know, most point spreads are 3 points. Right. I mean, when you look at Vegas, I mean, most your typical game is 3.5 points. It's going to be a close game no matter what. So the beauty is you have a quarterback that can win those games. He's proven that. So, you know, I think that's a lot of talk about. And if somebody has an idea, maybe there's a, you know, some stoners out there that play Madden all the time and they have a great play calls, you know, send them in to Shoddy, see if it works for him. But I think he's trying to call plays that he thinks are going to work, not whether it's the first quarter or the fourth quarter.
Well, here's some. Is it looking last year? And this is, and it's funny because, I mean, there's now, as we went through the last 2 years, they need to pass the ball more. They need to take advantage of Russell Wilson. And of course, you know, the pass blocking hasn't been that good. But last year, they ran the ball 46% of the time and passed it 54. You go back to 2018, it was 52-8 to 47-2. And that, of course, you know, led to a 10-win season and a lot of points in the second half of this year. But then you go back to the non-playoff year, they threw it 40.6% of the time. They ran it 40.6% of the time and they threw it 59-4, and they didn't make the playoffs.
Right. Yeah, and, you know, I know a lot of people with those stats. So I did this thing, John, where I looked at, you know, Russell's every game. And basically he has like a 75% win percentage in the playoffs when he throws it 25 times or less. If he throws it more, it's like 50-50. Same thing during the season. It's a lot better win percentage when he throws it less. Now, you know, you would say, well, that's because they have a lead, whatever. But still, I mean, for Russ, you mentioned the 2017 season. It was just too much for him. It was way too much for him. He had to do everything. And so the running game is so important. And that kind of gets back to our Carlos Hyde conversation versus, you know, getting Antonio Brown or, you know, and hopefully Josh Gordon. I'm all for Josh Gordon you know, the guy, he just needs to fix himself, right? He and he's not taking anything away from the team. Antonio Brown, that'd be a disaster. I mean, the guy's like a time bomb.
Mm-hmm. No, and I think that, again, I think you're right about the idea. It's like, because you look at Josh Gordon, he's a bonus. You know, Quentin Dunbar, if he's going to be able to play, he was a bonus. You get him for a fifth-round pick. I mean, Quandre Diggs last year, that was a bonus, something you didn't expect. I mean, and then now you look at Carlos Hyde, I look at that as a bonus.
Yeah, exactly. So that's, you know, something, I don't know. I don't think that's going to happen again. I mean, that was incredibly bad luck for the Seahawks.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at the end of the year, losing Britt and Disley, I still think that might have been the worst one. But, you know, but really in the grand scheme of things, I suppose if you look back, it's Carson. So, I mean, if they have even him or even just Penny, that they, you know, possibly make it to the NFC Championship game. And let's not forget, they were 1 foot away from winning the division. And then, you know, I feel like they're a running back away from going into the NFC Championship game against a team that they were a good matchup against.
No question. Dave Wyman, of course, thank you for our Wednesdays with Wyman. I will be talking at 4.
Sounds good, John. Thanks.
All righty. If you listen to the show via the 710 Sports app, it's powered by the Dubin Law Group. Coming up next, we are going to get the report card out. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
It's time for the report card with the professor.
In a report card we bring out every day, we look at the good, the bad, the ugly, the smart, the stupid, what people say, what people do. We take the stories, the anecdotes, we take the social media comments, we take the voices and attach a grade to it. Curtis Rogers gives us the report card. And so, Curtis, I guess, kind of grading things right now. How do you grade what is going on right now as far as, with basketball and hockey?
Yeah, I give the NHL a solid B for them, you know, saying, hey, we've got a plan in place once we're able to return. And, you know, it sounds like it's, you know, no one's objected to it so far. Obviously, you got to worry about, you know, once you get to that new city, are you going to have to quarantine players for 2 weeks once, you know, the NHL playoffs start in July? The NBA, I'll give them a C+ to a B- right now because they're looking at the Disney World facility, John. But earlier today, Disney World itself announced that they're planning on incrementally reopening the park on July 11th and July 15th. So you wonder, with the NBA players there, there could be some crowding issues, especially if tourists are allowed on the property at the same time that the NBA is allowed to play. So I worry that, you know, that plan may hit a snag here in the next couple of days. But hopefully there's a nice distance between the park visitors and the NBA players, because you don't want cross-contamination there.
No.
And you don't want to put anybody, whether it be a tourist or a player, at risk. John, let's get started on the report card today. Major League Baseball, they are currently in a battle with the players' union overpay. And one MLB team took a very bold step yesterday in ensuring that they will have enough money to make it through this. That'd be the Oakland A's, the notorious penny pinchers that they are. And they announced yesterday that they will not pay their minor league players after May 31st, the rest of the season, and they were only paying them about $400 a week at this current juncture. So, John, how are we grading the Oakland A's, who are owned by a $2 billion net worth owner, saying to their minor league players, too bad, we got to cut your costs here?
Yeah, you have to give them a D- to an F. I mean, again, it's like obviously there's no way that you can plan for it, and obviously we know that they're one of the lowest revenue teams in baseball. That's just a reality. But man, to pull the cord like that, that's got to be vicious, and particularly at a time right now where you have Major League Baseball, you know, asking the highest paid players to take an 80% pay cut. It's like, are you kidding me? It's like, you know, I know things are tough. I mean, you want to take care of the people that, you know, take care of all the business and everything else, but this is kind of ruthless.
Yeah, I give it an F as well, and it makes you wonder the feasibility of minor league baseball being played this year at any level, because if you're not going to be paying minor league players, what motivation do they have to go out and play right now if they're not going to be receiving, you know, even if it's just pennies on the dollar mm-hmm. like they normally get? And, you know, we've heard whispers over the last couple of weeks that the Major League Baseball might not have a minor league season this year. And moves like that, I think, kind of lend credence to that rumor that we could possibly see minor league baseball being played in one centralized location, or just have like a bus squad essentially follow the major league team around, that, you know, about 20 guys or so. John, also on the report card today, we spoke about the NBA players. Well, one NBA player, one superstar NBA player, Damian Lillard, said if his Blazers team does not have a shot at making the playoffs upon resumption of the season, then he will not play. Right now, it looks as though the NBA is trying to get in at least a couple of tune-up games before the playoffs start. So, right, and the Blazers are currently about 3.5 games out of the Western Conference playoffs. Here's Lillard on with ESPN's Mark Jones talking about why he will not play if the Blazers don't have a realistic shot at making the playoffs.
Obviously, we're professional basketball players, so we want to play. A lot of us have been training, you know, preparing for that because we started the season, so of course we want to finish it. But, like, right before we had this break, right before COVID-19 hit, we were in the middle of a playoff race, you know, a pretty tight playoff race, not just with us, but, you know, the 10th, 11th, and 12th place teams in the Western Conference are, you know, within striking distance. And you're looking at 15, 16 games remaining, and you got an opportunity to close in. So now with these things happening, you just would hope that when we do come back and play, that you have an opportunity to still be in pursuit of that instead of just coming back and playing just to play. You know, that's not what anybody wants. And again, we want to play, man, but we want to play for something, just like everybody else that's going to play for something. And, you know, that's it. Other than that, I'm still training and preparing to play, but, you know, we just want to play for something.
Lillard brings up some valid points because, you know, if you're only going to have the Blazers play just a couple of games and not give them a fair shot at making the postseason, then why bother playing for games that are meaningless? But, you know, John, a lot of people are kind of, you know, just chomping at the bit for any sort of sports action out there. So how are we grading Damian Lillard saying flat out, like, I'm not going to play if we're playing in meaningless games?
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to give him a C-, but I do think he raises a good point because, I mean, you saw what hockey did. They're not going to have any meaningless games down the stretch. They're going to start with, 24 games or 24 teams playing in a playoff-type format. Why not, if you're going to have supposed meaningless games, you have the teams right now that are outside of the whatever formula they have for the number of teams that could make the playoffs, go ahead and have a play-in type of situation. I mean, you have the teams right now that don't qualify in a position to face each other in however many games, and, you know, do it that way. Wouldn't that be much smarter? I think because, again, you want to have some meaningful thing. I mean, because, again, the players are risking their families, they're risking their bodies and all this stuff and the virus. It's like to do it for meaningless games, I think, isn't right. I mean, just to put games on TV, make them count, you know, have them playing.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And especially, I like what the NHL did, increasing their playoff size from 16 to 24 teams right now because of those teams that are kind of on the fringe that if the regular season were to get played into its, you know, entirety, they may have been able to make it into the postseason. If the NBA is able to work something out like that, maybe go from the 16 teams they have to maybe 20 or so, then that could satisfy those teams that are kind of on the playoff fringe. But yeah, who knows how it's going to all work out. I think the NBA is planning on making an announcement sometime in the first part of June as to how they plan on getting back. John, finally on the report card today, Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. We were just there a couple months ago for Super Bowl 54. They have announced that they are going to be converting that stadium for the time being into a drive-in movie theater. And I got to say, John, drive-in movie theaters, those were a great part of growing up. There aren't too many in the area right now. I think the last one in down south was in Auburn. That one closed down. But how are we grading the Dolphins and Hard Rock Stadium partnering to give people, you know, just something, some entertainment in this time where it's so hard to find any, and just doing good for their community?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a good thing. I mean, the only thing they have to make sure is everybody stays in their car and you don't have, you know, kids running around and, you know, getting close to everybody else. But I mean, you got great spacing. If that's the case, it gives people a chance to go and do something, which I think is nice. You have to figure out a way to maybe get the concessions going with, I don't know how they're going to make that go, but I think it's a great idea. I'll give it a B+.
Yeah, I'll give it a solid B+ as well. You know, hey, giving that community something to go do on a nighttime, hey, we'll gladly take any sort of entertainment. They say they can allow up to 230 cars on the field at Hard Rock Stadium, so if you're one of the first 230, you're getting in.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. Hey, be sure to check out the Professor's Notes on 710sports.com. The Professor's Notes are brought to you by Infinity of Tacoma at 5. Coming up next, we're going to take your text questions on the VisiHard Seltzer text line. It's the John Clayton Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It is time for your text questions. You can text us at 710-710, and we'll check everything out because the 710-710 text line is brought to you by Visi Hard Seltzer. So, Curtis, what do we have?
From the 206, John, they want to know, how much role do you think Alton Robinson will have for Seattle?
I think that I kind of look at him, you know, much like you saw the development of Jacob Martin. You know, I think that the playing time early is going to be very limited. He may actually be inactive, but I think as the season comes on, he'll get a chance to play a little bit more and more because I think he's a real good talent, and I know a lot of people think his upside is going to be really good. So I think he starts out limited play time, but I think he's going to earn more play time as time goes on.
509 wants to know, John, do you think Jay Gruden will help or hurt Gardner Minshew in Jacksonville?
Well, I think he can help because he's a good offensive coordinator, and I think he's a good play caller, and I think that you can see that he's trying to make a little bit of an impact because he was able to talk them into getting Chris Thompson. But the problem is, you know, they're just not a very good team. You know, I think that, you know, they can have success when they're playing teams that are, like them, losing records and all that. But, you know, last year he only won one game. I think it was a game against Tennessee, against a team with a winning record, and I think that could be pretty much what it's there right now. I mean, if he was surrounded by more talent, you'd feel a lot better.
253 wants to know, how big of a PR hit will Major League Baseball and the players take if they don't come back this year?
Devastating. I mean, absolutely. It would be, I think long-term damaging to the sport because, again, I think everybody wants it to happen. You know that, if bad negotiation leads to this, you know, you can probably see that's going to carry over next year into labor negotiations on a collective bargaining agreement. I think it could do so much damage to the game. They've got to figure a way to get this thing solved.
Yeah, because their CBA actually expires at the end of this season. Mm-hmm. So this could be, you know, stretching into the 2021 season. There could be a lot of hurt feelings, and I think it could do even more damage than what we saw in 1994 when they didn't have a World Series. So, you know, just for the health of the sport, I think it is important that they put some of these differences aside and get back to playing.
No,
from the 509, they want to know, John, which sophomore QB do you expect to have the best season, and which one is most likely to have a sophomore slump?
Certainly Kyler Murray, I think, has the chance to have the best season. I'm a little bit fearful. I mean, I think that, Drew Locke, I think, with the talent that's around him, can improve. But again, I mean, Kyler Murray is going to be the one that's going to make the biggest jump. I'm just worried about Daniel Jones because, again, you look at his jump, and you also look at Dwayne Haskins. I don't know if either one's going to make a major jump, and the fact that they didn't have an offseason program, I think, sets them behind. I know, in fact, it's kind of ironic that Colt McCoy said it the best. You know, back in 2011, he was in his second year starting in Cleveland, and he says having no offseason program because at that time it was a lockout set him back for years.
Not good. From the 360, John, they want to know, what are the odds that Seattle signs Damon Snacks Harrison?
I'd give it maybe 30-40% because it makes a lot of sense. I mean, he's the type that they really need. You know, but again, what's the cost? How much is he asking for? Because, you know, he's been talking about retirement, so he may put a premium on his time. But, he and I think Marcel Darius are the two best options right now.
From the 206, they want to know, John, What do you make of J.J. Watt's comments saying he's not seeking a contract extension?
I think that he realizes that he's made enough money during his career, and I think he's just more concerned about playing the game and then figuring it out. But I think he also realizes what's going on with that defense, because you know they've got four receivers making a combined $43 million a year. They pay $22 million to left tackle Jeremy Tunsil. They have to pay Deshaun Watson, and he's on that defense, and each time they make a move and get another offensive player signed, you know, particularly when you have what's going to end up being, you know, seven or eight players on offense making that much money, it costs them another defensive player. So I think he realizes the defense is probably going away, and maybe he just plays out his contract and see about going to another team.
From the 206, this is an interesting one. Who is the best defensive player in Seahawks team history?
I think that I still would go with Cortez Kennedy. Then, of course, I think you look at Kenny Easley, and then you start to look at some of the current group and see how that fits. I mean, the Legion of Boom and also Bobby Wagner.
Yeah, a lot of recent candidates on that list.
Oh, yeah.
Earl Sherman, Bobby Wagner, Cam Chancellor.
I think you start off with the Hall of Famers.
Yeah, I think Cortez Kennedy right now is the leader in the clubhouse, and Kenny Easley a close second, but those two, I think there's some distance between them and the Legion of Boom guys. The Legion of Boom as a whole, though, probably the most dominant unit the Seahawks have ever had, and just a really great group. From the 360, John, they want to know if Antonio Brown comes back to the NFL, what kind of contract would he be looking at?
Probably. Antonio Brown is not on everybody's mind right now. I mean, just because, I did say there's interest by them. But again, I think, you know, it's his value right now would be one year, $2 million. I can't imagine him even accepting that, because he still wants the $9-10 million a year. But who knows? I mean, again, he's in the backdrop of everything right now. I mean, there's too many more important things in football right now than Antonio Brown.
From the 425, who adds more wins to their team's total this year, DeAndre Hopkins in Arizona or Tom Brady in Tampa Bay?
I'd say Tom Brady in Tampa Bay, because it's not just DeAndre Hopkins, and because he's going to help them out a lot, but also remember, it's going to be Kyler Murray's advancement. And I look at the Cardinals as being, with those two, the most improved team in football. So I think they can get to maybe 7 wins, possibly 8. But in the case of Tom Brady, he's going to take an 8-win team to 10, and that is going to be even tougher, because, again, he's doing it in a very difficult NFC. He's doing it in a tough division, you know, where you still have Atlanta, you still have New Orleans, and you can take advantage of Carolina. But Tom Brady, you know, I mean, because, again, you think about what happens. Of course, you know, Arizona's added on defense, but there's only two additions of starting players on offense, and that was Brady and Gronkowski, and then their first-round pick as a right tackle as a third.
From the 206, they want to know, how many more seasons do you think Drew Brees has left?
I think he's two, but you can kind of get the feel the way they're positioning it that this could be it for him. I mean, he's already accepted a job with the network to broadcast. They have two options to replace him right now, and Taysom Hill, who they're paying $10.5 million, and Jameis Winston, who they're paying $1.5 million. I think that even though he can play two more years, I think this is going to be it.
And then from the 206, John, they want to know, what do you think New England's record will be in their first season without Tom Brady?
I'd say 8-8. I mean, you know, they're still good enough on defense to hang in there offensively. I mean, they're going to score so few points that I think it's going to be tough week in and week out, because they haven't added anything. I mean, when you think about as starved as they were for, you know, pass catching talents, okay, yeah, they have Mohamed Sanu back, and you know, their first round pick from last year is going to be there. They still have Edelman, but all they added was Marquise Lee. And Marquise Lee's making the minimum. How much better can they be?
And finally, John, let's wrap it on this one. From the 509, they want to know, do you think this is a one-and-done season for Rob Gronkowski?
Yeah, I think so. Because I think that he enjoys coming back. The one thing I thought was interesting is that he kind of debunked the idea that he came back for Tom Brady and Tom Brady alone. He actually came back because his mom now lives about a two-hour drive from Tampa, and so he wants his mom to be able to catch all the games at home, and so that was one of the reasons he ended up also wanting to go to Tampa too. But I think this is going to be probably one and done.
That is it for text questions.
Okay, you can, of course, the text line is brought to you by Vizzy Hard Seltzer. Coming up next, our daily dose of Dave Crosby.
Listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Our daily dose of Dave Grosby, their daily dose of the Gros. And so somebody just tweeted out something because I know I want to talk a lot about the stupid offer that the owners made on baseball that was so divisive and caused so much problems. But could you imagine now, you think about this, and the Oakland A's are now furloughing. They're going to stop payment to their minor league players, the $400 a week or whatever it is, the minor league players starting in June. Could you imagine if Kyler Murray would have taken the Oakland A's and played baseball with them as opposed to coming to the Arizona Cardinals for football?
Wouldn't be making even $400 a week, would he?
No, not at all. How crazy would that be? He had a $9 million signing bonus, I guess he had to pay back, but could you imagine how bad that would be?
Oh, yeah, there's a guy who has turned out and made the right choice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, because you can see, I don't know if he's going to have as big of a jump as Lamar Jackson did from year one to two, but you can anticipate, he's going to start moving up among the elite quarterbacks in this league from what we saw of him last year.
Agreed. I mean, and Lamar Jackson's probably the guy he's got in his sights. He showed everything, I thought, that an elite quarterback needs to show as a rookie. And if he continues to improve, yes, he's going to be in that group.
Yeah, and of course, what you look at with Kyler Murray, he's a better thrower than Lamar Jackson, who at least became a good pocket passer, all those things. But man, Kyler Murray, you look at the talent that he has just throwing the football along with running, I think he can exceed Lamar.
Wonder how serious he really was about baseball.
Yeah, you don't know. I mean, he was a first-round pick.
But that's such a different thing than being a first-round pick in football, as we've talked about, and money-wise, and just the guarantee of making it. I mean, as we've pointed out, and as we've unfortunately seen with the Mariners, a lot of times being picked in the first round doesn't guarantee anything in baseball.
No, that's
Whereas
true.
Whereas in the NFL, you're pretty much going to be a player.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And again, you're as a first pick in the draft, you're going to be making over $8 million a year and collecting a signing bonus probably in excess of $26, $27
million. Yeah, easy call.
Mm-hmm, no doubt about it. So how did you read what the owners did in making a proposal instead of the 50-50 revenue split, which was going to be rejected, to have all the top players in baseball basically take an 80 to 75% pay cut?
Well, I mean, I thought Brett Anderson of the Brewers tweet was pretty accurate, an interesting strategy of making the best, most marketable players potentially look like the bad guys. I mean, that's what it does. Sliding scale, it's designed to force infighting in the union, to make players look greedy. I can understand that if it was the regular negotiations, and we didn't have the backdrop of this a virus going on, but I thought it was from baseball standpoint, the kind of thing that shows that they're all about owners as well as players, if you want to say players are. The owners are all about the money too. There's no treating things differently that because of this virus, to try and get baseball back to quote unquote help the healing. It's pretty clear that's not going to be an issue for the owners here, because this is designed to sow discontent with the Players Association. I think a large percentage of the players are making towards the bottom, and they would lose the least. So it's a crafty proposal, but it's very cynical. A very cynical proposal.
Yeah, that I would agree, and a bad proposal too. So now the players have to come back with something, but they're starting to run out of time, because I think once you get into like the second week of June, how can you start to put everything together if right now both sides are so far apart?
Well, and remember, John, I mean, this is just the players' plan. I mean, they still haven't figured out all the mechanics of the specifics of how it works, where they play. Who plays? Do they quarantine? How do they test? How many support staff are going to be around? So it's all starting with this first, and then you get to the rest of that. It's the same thing that all the leagues running into. The NHL has kind of put forth a interesting proposal about having a 2014 playoff if they come back, but they as well have got to get their thing figured out with the players first, then deal with everything else, and everything else is a lot. All the infrastructure that's got to be put together to have guys and have teams play. So you're certainly right. The clock is ticking on anything being resolved by the 4th of July, which was kind of the whimsical goal of everyone involved. Just seemed like a nice idea to have, you know, baseball come back on that particular day, but this proposal doesn't get them any closer to that, I don't think.
No, no doubt. So what damage would it do if there's no baseball season? I'm not talking to the damage for the season, but long-term for baseball.
Well, especially, you know, going about it this way where the owners are making their best players look terrible. I mean, they're attacking, in a sense, with this proposal, they're attacking the very essence of their popularity. Like I said, it's something that you do, and we've seen in negotiations in the past. We haven't seen a lot of it recently. So you're going to have your players look like they're greedy because they won't play. It's going to turn fans off in I think big time numbers, and I think it's the sort of thing that can do lasting damage. You know, much more so than the other things that have come down the pike. There's no other way to paint this. It's going to look like everyone's being selfish, and I think it's unfortunate if that's what winds up happening, and I'm still holding out hope that it doesn't.
Yeah, but right now the hope does not look good because I think you can see that, you know, again, there's still time to do this, and I think everybody understands the urgency of getting something done. But I'm really worried about baseball because, again, they're going to be so far apart.
Well, they are, and you know, they I mean, look, this was, it's like I said, it was cynical, but it's a small step in the right direction. It got rid of the 50-50 thing, so. Let's look at it, if we can try and spin it in any kind of positive way at all. It took what was completely unpalatable off the table entirely. Now, we'll see how strong the baseball players union is on something like this. My expectation is that it's a lot stronger than the NFL union was and that the other unions are. So I don't think this will fly necessarily, but this is the kind of framework that they can actually work around. You know, whereas 50-50 was, you know, the end of conversation. You know, this is not a great start, but it is something of a start. You can look at it that way. So we'll see what the counter looks like, but not good news, John.
No. What do you think about the A's? I mean, you'd have to think that what they're doing, as drastic as it is, you know, stopping paying the minor league players, furloughs, layoffs, everything else, that their money situation must not be good, even though they have a $2 billion owner.
Right. That's a good point. I mean, you know, and that's just the thing. You know, owners don't take the losses. They just don't. I mean, the A's is still a small market club with small time revenues, regardless of who owns them. And you're going to see other small revenue clubs, because market size doesn't matter as much as it used to. Small revenue clubs doing the same thing and making pretty drastic cuts as thing goes on. And then, of course, if there's no season, then you're going to see every team be involved in mass layoffs, I would assume.
Yeah, it's a horrible situation. You just hope that sanity comes in there and you can figure out a solution. But boy, they are so far apart.
Just, it's so cynical, John. I mean, just to do this at this time, to say here's a chance for us to stir discontent. Let's make our star. I mean, like I said, the strategy, in a nutshell, is to make the star players look bad. How is that good for your long-term health in any way, shape, or form? I mean, it just isn't. It's just not the right way to go about it, period, in the story.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. And that's our Daily Dose of the Groz with Dave Grosby. David, thank you so much for joining us, and talk tomorrow.
John, sounds great. Thank you.
All righty. And, of course, we will be back tomorrow at 10 a.m. Hope everybody has a good day today. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.